No one wanted us. No one liked this team. No analyst liked this team to win the Super Bowl, and nobody likes our fans. And you know what? I've just heard one of the best chants this past day, and it's one of my favorite, and it's new, and I hope y'all learn it, because I'm about to drop it right now. You know what I gotta say to all those people that doubted us, to all those people that counted us out, and to everybody who said that we couldn't get it done? What my man Jay Ajayi just said, fuck you!
Sorry, Edinburgh.
One of the all-time great Super Bowl parade speeches ever from Jason Kelce, who, as expected, once he announced yesterday that he's having a press conference to make his announcement, he's not the kind of guy who's going to have a press conference to say, I'm going to keep playing.
I'm coming
playing.
Back, right. He's going
to have a press conference last year when he said he's going to keep playing. And at one point during his 45 to 50 minute very well-written retirement speech, during which he didn't announce his retirement for a very long period of time, it occurred to me that would be the ultimate move if he does all this stuff and then says at the end, I'm coming back for one more year. But it was clear from the moment he came out.
He was breaking down, I mean, right, you know, throughout, right? So you knew it was coming. It was too emotional for it to be like, hey, I'm coming back, right? So that was definitely one clue.
He couldn't even get started.
I know.
He could not even get started.
Couldn't even wear sleeves.
Couldn't even wear
sleeves to the opening for the press conference. That's what I first thought. That was like the first thing that caught my attention was just the no sleeves. I was like, what? Wow. Coming in with a different look here for the retirement press conference. No sleeves look? Or just like he's off the game, took the shoulder pads off, and went to the podium one last time?
You know, that's what it felt like. And I like that. I like it when we see these press conferences where guys wear the stuff they would ordinarily wear. He's a guy who would just pick up whatever shirt happens to be close by,
kind of like
put
you.
It on, and off he goes.
Yeah.
Right. For him, it's usually a T-shirt. If you watch the Kelce documentary, and I highly recommend it on Amazon Prime, sorry, Peacock, but there are other, you know, avenues out there that have content that we don't. Not many. Sometimes. There's just other, I'm not saying it's all better. There's just some things that others have that we don't, that we need to watch as part of our job. I hope I haven't got myself in trouble as I try to
How
explain
could you?
My way out of that corner.
There's football on that app, then we're allowed to watch
but
it.
But the Kelce documentary is actually worth your time. But I see him like all the time in a Cleveland Heights or a New Heights or some other T-shirt. It's like a Brett Favre vibe, although it's no longer, not that it ever was hip to drop Brett Favre's name, but it just kind of that roll out of bed and just off you go with your day. I got too much to do to worry about what I'm wearing.
It's understated, like, cool. Yeah, but yet he does care. What he's wearing, though. That's where it's kind of cool, because it's always, like you said, a cool, kind of trendy or creative T-shirt to go on top of it, right? So he does a good job of dancing the fine line there of, like, I don't care, but yet, oh, I have a cool T-shirt that nobody else has. Let me wear that and sport that, right? Here's another thing, Mike. What is the outfit? I don't remember the outfit from that 2017. What is that?
It's called Mummers. I never did the research. It's Mummers. It's a parade that they do, I guess, in Philly.
Oh, they only do
so
it in Philly?
Mummers,
yeah, it's very
outfit.
Mardi Gras-ish, right? I didn't quite
And he held
it.
On to it.
Right.
He held on to it in the event that he would need it again. He never needed it again, but he almost needed it a year ago when the Eagles played the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. The Mummers Parade is held every New Year's Day in Philadelphia. It started in 1901. It is the longest-running continuous folk parade in the United States. I mean, he looks like the guy who ultimately let Dorothy and her companions into the Emerald City. When I first saw it, that's what I thought it was.
Okay,
remember the guy when like he opens the door and he talks to him and they go away and come back or whatever. And then he opens the door and lets him in. That's what I thought. It was some kind of Wizard of Oz thing. So I didn't know what it was either.
So what's the parade about, though? I'm learning something here. What is the parade about? Like, is there a reason? It's just a January 1st parade. That's just Happy New Year. That's all it is. Okay. All right.
I don't know what a mummer is.
I don't either.
Mummer. M-U-M-M-E-R. ER. Maybe it's people who drink Mum's wine. You can get a whole bunch of Mums on New Year's Day. I don't know.
I'm kind of surprised. Anyway. I don't know, as Philly being so close to the New York area and where I grew up. It's one that it didn't cross state lines there. Like, I'd never heard that in Jersey or New York City. So I'm totally kind of out in the dark on that one.
We're efforting more information about the
Mummers. I'm sure Pete's looking it up. I'm sure.
Phenomenon. Pete is looking it up. Mummers. M-U-M-M-E-R-S. Anyway, by the way, the show's PFT Live. We're here on Peacock, Sirius XM 85. We're getting closer and closer to kind of all hell breaking loose in free agency. He picked a good day to announce his retirement. And remember last week when we had Howie Roseman, the Eagles general manager, on PFT Live from the Combine, I asked him, because in the Kelce documentary, he's agonizing over whether to play another season. Right around this time of year last year, and by his demeanor and words, got the impression team wanted to know by the start of the league year what he's going to do, because obviously it affects your plans. Howie said to us, oh, it really doesn't matter, whatever. And, you know, when I think back now on what he said and how he said it, I think he already knew.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he already knew.
Right. A lot of people knew.
I think Kelce knew.
Yeah.
He knew. We knew.
I knew.
We knew the
right way
he conducted himself after the Buccaneers beat the Eagles 32-9 in the playoffs, that it was done. He didn't talk to reporters. One of the teammates said he's done. It just felt like this is where it's going, unless he changed his mind. But he wasn't going to change his mind. He didn't change his mind. And he found a perfect dead spot, because the scouting combine took over last week. Free agency starts next week, Monday of this week. Perfect time to do it. Monday or Tuesday would have been the perfect time to do it. So, certain amount of strategy involved in this, I think. Smart strategy. You don't retire on a late Friday afternoon. You want to have your victory lap. You want people like us to have a chance to talk about it and give him his flowers. Got no problem with that. He picked the right day to do it, I think. It was the right week. It was the right day. It was the right time. And he's getting a lot of praise, as he should. Six-time All-Pro. Seven-time Pro Bowler. He had a couple of years where... one or two years, and I need to pull it up here, where he was an all-pro but not a Pro Bowler. How? That's the Antoine Winfield. How do you pull that off?
Why? When is everybody going to give up on the Pro Bowl? The Pro Bowl means nothing. It means nothing. I mean, it really. Who the hell cares? No, it holds no water of value anymore. I mean, we're seeing like the 12th best quarterback in one conference go to the Pro Bowl. Who the hell cares anymore? You know, it has nothing.
17 and 18, right. He was an all-pro.
It tells you how clueless the Pro Bowler voters are, and that they probably shouldn't be able to vote. Right. That's what it does tell you. Right. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, Mike, you're right. It was a good day for him to do that. Dead day. He deserves a king send-off. He's one, if not the greatest center of our era. Right. And a great personality. You don't cry like that at the end of the wild card game when they lost to the Bucks, unless you know it's kind of coming to an end, right? The conversations, you know, I had with him at the Super Bowl, that certainly led me to believe that he wasn't playing anymore. And I had heard from other people throughout the media that he had been having conversations with certain people too, that all kind of, I think, led to this point. So, you know, it's a sad day. It stinks because he's still damn good. That's the crazy thing, too. This is not like a guy who's just hanging on to his starting spot, you know, because I've been with one team for 13 years and, you know, they've kind of let me start the last few years, even though I haven't been that good. It's still high-level football. It really is. So he's going out on top as far as his quality of play, and he's going out on top in general because of the kind of person he is and personality and player he was in general.
There were reports during Super Bowl week that he met with pretty much every network.
Exactly, right.
That broadcasts football. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I'm not going to name names, but, you know, there's some reports yesterday that, you know, naming the various networks that broadcast football and say they're candidates for Jason Kelce. Well, gee, thanks. I mean, MTV, you know, we'd hire you if we broadcast football. Like, it isn't all that hard to figure out the candidates for the services of Jason Kelce, unless he's going to make a dramatic turn into something in broadcasting other than football. There aren't many places where he will be working. The question is studio or booth. I saw some stuff yesterday. I think it was Andrew Marchand, now of the Athletic, saying that Jason Kelce is talking to people about the studio. God, you know what? Having witnessed Drew Brees' maximum discomfort from afar because I wasn't traveling the year that Brees was working with us, take him out of a stadium and put him in a studio, you know what that's like. I don't think Jason Kelce is going to like being in a studio. I don't think Jason Kelce, not that I have a problem with being in a studio, but you know, there's a fundamental difference between being at a game and the energy and the atmosphere of being at a game and being in a laboratory, which is kind of what we do every Sunday.
I don't think he's going to have a problem either way. He's got two gregarious, right? Is that the proper word of a personality?
Well done.
You know, where I just feel like he'll...
I'm just saying, will he like it?
I get you.
Will he like it?
Yeah. I don't know.
That's my point.
I hear you there. I do know that Kelsey's a little... I know Travis more than I know Jason, right? They are football guys. They're personality guys, right? I've never been around either one of them where it isn't jokes and fun and whatever else. So I do think he'll thrive no matter what. I hear you, though, there. That's a valid point. But as you know, there's only a few of those seats that are really available that I feel like would pay somebody like Jason Kelce the kind of money that would make it worth it, worthwhile for him, too, as far as announcing the football games, right? So I'd be interested. But I think he'll be good at anything he wants to be good at. He does love the game. He understands the game in a lot of ways. It was a sad day to see a legend of the sport like that go. The Eagles, they got replacements. We know that. They're still going to be damn good. But it's not easily to replace a guy like Kelce and the leadership and the things he does in the locker room to go along with the great play on the field.
Like I said, he spoke for about 45 or 50 minutes yesterday announcing his retirement. Here's a little bit of it. Here's the moment where he finally makes it clear that he will not be playing football anymore.
Where I announce that I am retiring. Where I announce I am retiring from the NFL after 13 seasons with the Philadelphia Eagles. And today, I must admit, I am officially overrated. Vastly overrated. But it took a lot of hard work and determination getting here. I don't know what's next, but I look forward to the new challenges and opportunities that await. And I know that I carry with me the lessons from my time here, and that forever. And that forever we shall all share the bond of being Philadelphians.
Sixth round pick in 2011, 191st overall, not a highly regarded offensive lineman. He told the story yesterday about how at Cincinnati, a strength coach, when Brian Kelly became the head coach, suggested that he play offensive line. He said, you know, you'd make a pretty good center, and that was to Jason Kelce something he wasn't interested in. He wasn't interested until he explored it. And it just shows you that if you have a high degree of determination and you're willing to put in the work and then some. And for football, it's not just work. It hurts. It's painful. It's uncomfortable. It is exhausting. It's relentless. But if you really want it and you're willing to put in the effort, you can achieve something far beyond what your objective physical skills and abilities would suggest. He willed himself to become an NFL player. He willed himself to become a Hall of Fame center, six-time first-team All-Pro. He decided, this is what I want to do, and he went out and did it. And I think there's a great message in that. I've mentioned that a few times in recent weeks because, you know, a lot of people want something for nothing. A lot of people want to end up on top of the mountain without climbing it. He decided he's going to climb that damn mountain. He didn't know where it was going to take him, but he's going to climb that damn mountain. It's hard not to respect everything about that, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really anything you could talk about in Jason Kelce's career where you don't go, well, that I respect that, or I respect him, or the way he handled that was great, right? I mean, they're really, I can't think of any negative moments when it pertains to Jason Kelce, right? Freaky athlete in a lot of ways, like we know the Kelce family is, okay? Yeah, hard worker with freaky athlete, combine that, Hall of Fame center. That's what you get. A guy that, like you talked about, in the nuances, worked, did everything. Blessing in disguise, they switched him there, right? Has kind of the perfect center body. The center, you don't want him to usually be the giant, slow off the ball, I'm bigger and, you know, semi-fatter than most guys on the O-line. That's not who the center is. The center is, like, not only like the alpha physically in a lot of ways, right? And that's where Kelce was. The center is the alpha mentally. I mean, the center, even though he might not be as good as Jordan, or big as Jordan Mailata, you know, or, the big right tackle.
Lane Johnson.
Exactly, right? I guarantee when Jason Kelce spoke in the room, everybody listened, right? That's the guy that kind of leads the charge there in that room. And that's where, you know, I think he was special. He led the offense the last few years. He's a huge part, I feel like, in the fact of the Philadelphia fan base accepting Jalen Hurts and getting the message out there about what he was like behind the scenes. So, you know, between the work ethic like you're talking about, the talent, a coach, a little luck going, hey, wait, you kind of look like you'd make a good center, all that, you know, hit a pinnacle for an unbelievable career. You know, that we're saying, again, Hall of Fame, and then had a special ending with a play that is rare, that is revolved around the center that took over the league for 2 years. Like, what? Like, we spent one time a week for the last, 38 weeks of the football regular season talking about the tush push, you know, the brotherly shove. And that is all predicated on Jason Kelce's talent. And of course, some of the other guys, but it starts with him. And that's cool. We've never had that in the history of football. A play that kind of revolved around a center, that's pretty damn rare.
And he told Laura Oakman at one point this past season that every time he did that play, as soon as it started, he yelled, F.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it.
Loudly.
I mean, damn, I thought we'd have to say it the right way. We got to give the guy his due credit, say it the proper way.
Well, hey, listen. He's got no filter. I think he would fit in well at NBC. He's got even less of a filter than you.
I don't know about that.
What he said about Nick Foles yesterday?
Well,
holy crap.
I wouldn't be talking about people's man junk on my retirement party. No, I would not.
Well, you would be. You have, but not quite the very blunt and direct way that he did. I had to text my writers who work with me at PFT. Did he say what I think he said?
Yes, he did.
So, yeah. So, no filters there, and I think it's great. He just drops F-bomb whenever he feels like it. If you watch the Kelce thing again, it's F-bomb this, F-bomb that. Kids are around. Kind of like
kids got to learn.
Phil with you.
That's
kids
right.
Kids got to learn sometimes.
Kids got to learn. He wants to be in a locker room one day.
Crack me up. You talked about him being a leader for the Eagles, and they showed him speaking to the team the night before Super Bowl 57. You know, the last evening, getting everybody in the right mindset in a conference room at a hotel. And at one point, he just spits on the floor in the conference room in the hotel. Like, not many people can get away with that. He can get away with it. He can do whatever he wants. He can say whatever he wants. Here he is from yesterday addressing an issue that I don't really remember because it's like lather, rinse, repeat NFL seasons for me. Apparently, he did not do well in 2016. And still made the Pro Bowl. Not all pro, but he still made the Pro Bowl in 2016. Trade rumors abounded because he didn't have a great year. Let's hear from him on that.
I was wanted out of town by nearly everyone. And it wasn't just the fans that wanted me to go on. It was nearly everyone in this organization. That offseason, I heard trade rumors galore and speculation I'd be cut. I imagine if the Eagles had received a trade offer for a brand new set of washing machines, they may have pulled the trigger. Hell, if I was in charge, I would have pulled the trigger. There's only one person in this building who still wanted me, and it's he who I have to thank most for the career I've had. That's Jeff Stoutland. He was adamant my problems could be fixed with proper technique, fundamentals, and work. And work we did. That offseason in training camp, I focused on using my hands better, playing with leverage, proper footwork, and prepared with an edge to prove to myself that I was good enough. The following season in 2017, I enjoyed the finest season of my 13-year career, not only as a player, but as a team. And it meant more because of the struggles and work we had been through.
And that 2017 season, his seventh in the NFL, would be his first as an All-Pro, which, you know, for most guys, it happens if it's going to happen
it's rare.
Lot earlier
right.
than year seven.
Right.
He made it to a couple of Pro Bowls, but he wasn't All-Pro. And he wasn't All-Pro that or Pro Bowl that year. The finest year of his career. Isn't that amazing? The finest year of his career. Back to your point, and I don't want to spend too much time talking about something that is, was, and forever will be a joke, but the idea that he regards that as the finest season of his 13 years in the NFL, and he doesn't have the Pro Bowl designation for it, really is laughable. It really is.
That yes.
The All-Pro voters got it. The Pro Bowl voters didn't, and it's a combination of 33% fans, 33% players, 33% coaches. It's 100% wrong. A lot of times, and this is the best example of it. One more thing, too.
Yeah.
He made the comment at one point that, like, his career took off after he met his wife. He gave her a lot of credit. Like, there's something about having that aspect of your life. When that aspect of your life is under control and you have focus and you have support and you have love in your life.
That's right.
You can really explode.
Yeah.
And it probably wasn't a coincidence that that's when his career took off after he met his wife.
No, I don't disagree with you there. You know, Kylie Kelce, right? She's a big Eagles fan. I think grew up right there in Philadelphia or the area. So that helped probably him embrace the whole, you know, circumstance even more. But that's, you know, to your point, Mike, why coaches and everybody, they do like a guy a lot of the times when he's married. In certain ways, because they know, yeah, at the end of the day, he's going to go home. You know, he's not going to go to the club or the bar, or, you know, go chase girls, do anything like that, not go hang out with, you know, the guys and maybe drink more beers or smoke more weed than he should, right? Anything like that. That's where it does mean something, you know, in a facility that way. And, of course, it does mean something to your career because when you do have a wife at home and young kids, it changes your perspective, as we all know, right, with any business or any person that has a job out there. You start to go, wait, this is bigger than me. I'm working for something else here, too. You know, yeah, I like football. I like making money and all that, but I'm working here to, oh, keep this little cute kid I got here in a great house and a great life and my wife and all of that. So that all starts to hit home. When you got a wife, and especially a wife that seems like she's strong personality, strong person in general, you know, to keep a guy like Jason Kelce in check a little bit, right? So I'm not surprised to hear that. I'm not. And they got a cool relationship, as we know. And, you know, the Kelces are just cool. That's what they are. You know, they have found the way of being like, man, like I'm still a man and I got a man cave, but like also being very aware of society and the way it's changed and being new aged and everything that way too. That's where I really respect the Kelces, the conversations they have, you know, and then of course their ability to be themselves. That's where I'll love Jason or Travis, but you know, Jason, it's his day, whether it's the 2017 Super Bowl parade or even this year. I mean, come on, you know, to go up to Buffalo and just take off your damn shirt with Taylor Swift and company and set the crowd in the country like crazy. I mean, look at these people. They're three sections over. He's getting the middle finger from one of them, but they're, you know, they got a great way about them. And I find it hard not to watch them when they're on TV or on a podcast or whatever, because I do think they're cool and they are entertaining.
They're low-key brilliant.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, the smartest people out there don't feel compelled to tell you how smart they are.
Yeah.
They don't feel compelled to use big fancy words all the time. They just are who they are, and they blend in with everybody else, and they interact with everybody else. And you realize in certain moments, like when he was reading assuming he wrote it, that thing was extremely well written. And writing is just communication. It's just a different type of communication. It's words you would say reduced to writing that come off in the right way. He really did write an incredible retirement press conference speech for himself. And he also understood innately the connection to the fans in Philadelphia. And it's as simple as, where was I drafted? Where am I going? How are the fans there? How do I mesh with them? And I think it was a perfect fit. Even though he's from Cleveland, it was a perfect fit of his personality and the way that Eagles fans approach the game. People are afraid of them. They think they're crazy. They think they're irrational. They threw snowballs at Santa Claus and all that nonsense. But he gets it. Here he is talking about fans in Philadelphia. This is a great lesson for anyone who plays sports in Philadelphia or in any town where the fans are passionate about their sports teams. Have a listen.
Some people struggle to play in this city. They can't handle the booze, the media, or our fans. Consider it a great blessing to play in the most passionate sports town in America. If you don't like what the fans and media are saying as a player, it's very easy. Love them, treat them like your brothers, and go out and play your balls off. Wear your heart on your sleeve, and I guarantee you change those narratives. I remember seeing Zach Ertz shy away from a block one game against Vontaze Burfict in the Cincinnati Bengals. Rightfully so, the fans ripped him apart, crushing him for doing it. The next week, the first catch I saw Zach Ertz snag, he ran after the catch like I had never seen. It took three guys to bring him down, and I heard the link erupt with cheers for his effort. Today, you won't find a single Philadelphian with a bad word to say about Zach Ertz and the legacy he left behind.
That's all they want. They want the players and the coaches and the executives and the owners to care as much as they do. That's true of any fan. That's the thing that, you know, it bothers me that fans resent players and get behind the owners, and there's certain predictable trends that happen. It's like, folks, why don't you have greater respect and appreciation for the folks who play the game? And I think they feel that at times the guys who play the game, the coaches who coach the games, they don't care to the same level as the fans do. And it's a very migratory process where coaches move and players move. Kelsey didn't, but I think it makes it a little harder to have that same connection. But for him to come there, stay there his whole career, he basically became an Eagles fan. He is an Eagles fan. He acts like an Eagles fan. He behaves like an Eagles fan. He
right.
talks like an Eagles fan.
Right.
He wants his team to be great. That's all they want. And the stuff that drives people crazy is just the manifestation of a very strong desire by the fans in Philadelphia to win.
Yes.
And that explains why after they got one Super Bowl, Chris, what happened? They got worse. Maybe the way to look at it is they got better.
Well, he has some monumental parts of his career. He's going to the Hall of Fame. Between his own personal play, right? You got to have some monumental parts of your career. The upset of the Patriots in the Super Bowl, right? You got to be able also to be that Hall of Famer. You know, a lot of the times, as we know, the team you're on or the unit you're leading has got to be somewhat of a namesake in the NFL or something there. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line led by him the last few years became one of the most inevitable forces on an offensive line that we had seen, like that you heard me say, since the 90s Cowboys. I mean, their run game, they only run like two run plays, and they still ran on everybody, right? I don't even know what they would look like if they had a creative run game. That'd be scary. Like, if somebody like Shanahan or some other great coaches in football gave them a few of their run plays, I'd be like, oh my gosh. They were running plays because of Kelsey's talent and everything else, where they were like, yeah, you know the play, and we know the play, and you still won't stop it. It's incredible that way, you know? And then you're right, he embodies the city. You know, Philadelphia's got a little of that Cleveland, hey, tough, working man, no-nonsense type attitude. So you could see how he, you know, made that switch or fits in Philadelphia. And, hey, we were at the Adele concert on Friday night before the Super Bowl. To your point of he acts like an Eagles fan, right? I mean, Pete, this is on social media if you guys want to pull up the clip. Adele is talking about the Super Bowl and who you're rooting for, and some loudmouth jerk from Philadelphia yells out, "Eagles!" Well, that loudmouth jerk we heard at the start of the concert was Jason Kelce, which is a typical Eagle thing to do, but that's the way they work and that's the way they go about things. So, yeah, you know, he is. He's an Eagle through and through, on the field, in the stands, whatever. He embodies the city of Philadelphia.
And by the way, the Mummers Parade embodies the city of Philadelphia. Pete has gathered more information. We'll put a bow on the funny hat that Jason Kelce wore to that parade and rally after the 2017 season with this. The Mummers Parade is related to the Mummers Play tradition from Great Britain and Ireland. Revivals are still held there in some cities. Historically, Mummers Plays consisted of informal groups of costume community members, mostly male, that visited house to house on various holidays and performed folk plays. The word mummer is believed to derive from the early New High German term mummer, a.k.a. disguised person, or maybe the Greek name Momus, a god of mockery and scoff. So now you know. More
look at us
about the Mummers Parade, but apparently our friends who watch the program
the UK
on Sky
is gonna
Sports,
know. Right?
Sky Sports action in the off season, they knew all about it because, like so many things we do over here, it came from there.
Yeah, no, it's good. It ties it all together, right? I'm sure you'll probably get a few emails from some viewers on Sky Sports about, you know, how the hell did we not know about Mummers and all that? I had no clue. That is totally new to me. But very cool. Very cool, certainly. And, hey, again, that just it shows the point, once again, of Jason just embracing the culture of the city and why they loved him so much. It's a sad day to see him go. Damn good player, right? Great personality. Love hearing him in front of the mic no matter what. But I know it's not the last time we're going to hear from him in general. He's going to be on our TVs in some way here in the next year. I don't know. It'll be a studio or a game or whatever, but he's not out of our life, and that'll be a good thing because, you know, I really do respect and enjoy Jason Kelce.
And the last point on this, will he be recognizable when we see him next? How many offensive linemen over the years, recent years, from Matt Burke, Jordan Gross, Russell Okung, Nick Hardwick, guys who have those big bodies, the minute they stop playing, they don't need that big body anymore. And I say that because if you watch the Kelce documentary, Jason Kelce wasn't always. He didn't come out swole, as Byron Murphy told us last week. He was a thinner build.
Right.
And I think this evolution of himself and willing himself to find his niche in football as a center included creating and crafting and sculpting that body that wants a bust out of that uniform. Remember when you were a kid, it is still, I'm sure the plant has not gone extinct. We used to mess around with those touch me nots, which was this like pea pod that was bursting. And if you touched it, the seeds flew everywhere and it would be like particularly ripe and ready to burst. Like in his shirt, he's like a touch me not ready to bust. You know, it's so tight because he doesn't want to have his shirt held and thrown around by defensive linemen. But, you know, there's not a lot left to the imagination with his build, especially when he takes his shirt off at the playoff game.
Right.
But I got a feeling, and he's, you know, unless he's concerned that people just won't recognize him and they won't relate to him anymore, he's probably going to go the way of the offensive lineman that we see transition to, like, oh, my God, who is that?
It'd be interesting. It will. You know, sometimes they get like that and they kind of, you know, O-line can kind of get stuck like that forever a little bit. Like, man, I've made myself like this. I'm just, this is the way I am now. My metabolism, whatever else, right? You know, you see it go usually one way or another. Like other offensive linemen I've seen in my career, right? If they're 300 pounds, it's either like the next time I see them, I go, oh, shit, they're 380 pounds now. They've been enjoying life and doing whatever. Or it's more along the lines like you're talking about, the 300-pounder. Now you see him and go, damn, he's 255, looks like a different human being, right? I would think, to your point, that Kelce's body is probably closer to his brother's body when totally natural, right? You know, Travis is naturally 6'5", 255, you know, doesn't work out like as far as let me sculpt and have huge muscles and all that. I would think Jason, next time we see him, he's in his 260s, maybe low 270s. I'll be interested to see what he does. And unless he does have a sweet tooth and he does like drinking a ton of beer, which I wouldn't be shocked, then maybe he'll stay at that weight a little longer than we'd expect.
Yeah, I mean, for some of these guys, when they got to put on the offensive lineman body, it's like, oh, it's a lot of work to eat all this food and drink all this beer. Some guys are like, hey, I kind of like this, and I'm not going back.
Yeah, right. Or their offensive line body, you know, as I've told stories to you before, is they're actually dieting to be 315 or 320. You know, there's those guys, right? I mean, every team I was ever on a Friday morning.
Trent Brown.
Right. There was offensive linemen who, oh, it's 7 a.m., and the strength coaches are out by the weight scale, and they're waiting for the five or six guys on the team, right? And usually two or three of them are offensive linemen where, yeah, they better be under 320 today for the Friday practice or they're going to get fined and lose money, right? So it can go either way. I would think he's going to go the other way. But I do, you know, he does like beer. We know that. He's has let that out of the bag there. So we'll see where that goes.
We're going to see him everywhere. We're going to see him in commercials. We're going to see him with a network. It's just a question of when, where, and how that process will play out in the coming weeks. Usually the networks have their lineups locked in by May, because in May, that's when the process unfolds, where the networks go unveil their various lineups to advertisers in the hopes of getting them to support that network's lineup. And when you have a marketable guy like Jason Kelce, the sooner you get him under contract, the better. Okay, many people expressed thanks and appreciation and wished the best to Jason Kelce in his retirement. One of them, Russell Wilson, who is not retiring, but who made news late in the day yesterday with the thing that we all expected or should have expected from the moment he was benched, with games left in the regular season and the Broncos still mathematically alive in the chase for a playoff spot in the AFC. The Broncos will release Russell Wilson at the start of the league year. Why at the start of the league year? Because they have to do it as a post-June 1 designation in order to take the cap charge that would be $85 million and split it over 2 years. It's not a 50-50, $42.5 million split, $35.4 million, and then the balance after that. However, there is a way they could do it. I'm going to write this up at PFT. I'm not going to bore anyone with it now. I'll bore you with other stuff instead. They could take a bigger number for 24 and less for 25. There's one specific thing they can do. They've yet to determine that yet, sources tell me. But it's going to be $85 million in dead money over the next 2 years because they traded for him, and then before he even played in a regular season game, they gave him a contract they never should have given him. Now they take it away. Now he's going to become a free agent, and now the Broncos are going to move on, and it's all about that $37 million for next year. They didn't want to owe him $37 million fully guaranteed in 2025, so they eat the $39 million they owe him this year. And if they don't do the thing that they could do to reduce next year's number, that's the one that's coming next year, it can still be reduced, so it's not set in stone yet. It can still be less than $40 million. They'd have to take more now to make that happen. But if they do what we've thought they're going to do, 35.4 this year, 49.6 next year, for a grand total of $85 million in dead money, which means it's money they have paid him or will pay him because they owe it to him this year, that comes back and hits the cap after he's gone.
This is this is monumental, right? I mean, we knew this was coming. We knew this. I mean, we know people around football. We knew it was coming. Sean Payton had a Freudian slip last week anyways and said, we got to get the next one right. Right? That was like, oh, great well, catch. There's going to be a next one.
Yep.
Right? So we knew that. either way. But, you know, even if we didn't hear Sean Payton, you know, you'd been all over it, telling him that he's going, you know, telling the whole world he's going to be released, right? I mean, this is crazy. This is crazy. This is one of the most monumental organizational blunders in the history of football. I'm not going to, you know, sugarcoat it. It really is. When you talk about all the assets that were given to trade away to get Russell Wilson, the amount of money, the new contract you talked about, and for what? For basically nothing? A few wins, right? Not playoffs, not anything like that, just a few wins. Relevant in the news a little bit for a little while because we got it. That's all they got. You know, that's crazy, right? Let alone then one of the greatest coaches of all time, certainly one of the greatest offensive minds of all time, comes into town to sweep in and I'll save the day. I'm the quarterback whisperer. Everybody knows that. I'm the offensive genius. I'll fix this situation. Well, fixed it to a degree. Fixed it to a point where he said, wait, I think I've maximized the fixing and it ain't good enough, right? Oh, no. Like, is this all we got here? Uh-oh, right? So this is insane. This is a huge, huge story. Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl. We looked at him as being, you know, a big-time franchise quarterback. Yet all he's done in Denver is kind of show the opposite. The flaws have all come out. All of it. And he's not, you know, in the category of the guys that he so badly wanted to be like Mahomes and Josh Allen. Let me do that. Let Russ cook. Well, yeah, Russ don't cook like Mahomes or Josh Allen. Their meals are a lot better. You know, that's where it is absolutely crazy. And then to have three of the eight dead salary cap numbers in the history of football all be attributed to Russell Wilson, that's a huge hot, it's a huge shot to him, the reality, the perception of him, whatever. Those things, all that's around Russell Wilson, you sit here right now and you go, where the hell is Russell Wilson going to play quarterback next year? And who the hell is going to have the guts to make him the starting quarterback? After what we've seen the last 3 or 4 years, whether you go to Seattle into Denver. So this is crazy stuff. This is stuff you don't see every day. We're, I think, a little numb to it because we all saw this coming. But still, when I saw it yesterday, I was just like, wow, I can't believe it. Incredible.
Well, and remember, that trade was the culmination of multiple years of angst that the Seahawks wouldn't let Russ cook. And I think I've learned over the past few years that let Russ cook is more of a post-snap thing, pre-snap thing.
100.
I think that's how he got himself into trouble with Sean Payton. There are certain things that need to be done before the play begins that Russell Wilson was not doing. One of the problems is the play takes a little too long to get in. And then you go line up, and we see all the gesticulations of the Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allens and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady's of the world. You don't see a lot of that with Russell Wilson. He just wants to make magic happen with the ball in his hands. And whatever the reason, and we're not casting blame here, we're just explaining why it didn't work. It didn't work because the stuff that Sean Payton needs a quarterback to do before the snap wasn't happening. You get from a bad play to a good play before the snap. That's preferred to turning a bad play into a good play after the snap. Although it's great if you can do it. Not every quarterback can,
right?
But most quarterbacks are expected, if they spot something in the defense, to turn a bad play into a good play before the snap. We don't have any time left on the play clock to do it. That's a problem, and I think that's just a slim example of why Sean Payton came to the conclusion he came to, that this guy is not our franchise quarterback. Therefore, we're not going to let another $37 million in injury guarantees for next year become fully guaranteed on March 17. That's what this is all about.
Yeah.
If he would have agreed to bump that vesting date to next year, which is what they asked. They didn't ask him to waive his injury guarantees. They didn't. That's been the biggest misconception about all this, fed by the fact that Russ has kind of casually and maybe inartfully explained it that way. They never asked him to give up injury guarantees. They wanted to take that vesting date from March 17 of 2024 for next year, 2025, $37 million guaranteed. They wanted to move that to next year. And if you do that, and hey, we owe the guy $39 million anyway this year, maybe we will keep him around.
He's going to be the quarterback of the Broncos.
Maybe we will try to work with him.
Right.
Maybe we will.
Right.
Maybe we will try to make lemonade and or chicken salad. That would be a nice lunch for Sean Payton and company if they could pull it off. But they're not going to take on another $37
million. No.
In full guarantees for an experiment that wasn't going to cost them any more anyway because they were already on the hook for the $39 million this year. That's why he's been cut, because he refused to move the $37 million vesting date from injury guarantee to full guarantee.
Yeah. I mean, Sean Payton wasn't like, oh, I want to do this and I want to put my team in a bad spot and have to deal with salary cap issues. Like, you know, Sean Payton took this job thinking like, wait, I can get Russell Wilson going here and I don't have to worry about quarterback the next few years. Right? One, there was the play on the field that you explained the right way. You know, he did a good job. Right? But, like, a good job in what context, right? A good job that we talked about. They were managing him to a degree. I'm sitting there, and I'm telling you, and we talked about this, you know, what, late November, where I'm going, you know, hey, Russell, he's got good numbers and all that, sure, but Sean Payton has finagled it that way. You know, you watch the film, you watch a game, and you go, damn, they only run 10 or 12 plays on offense. Sean Payton's gotten 12,000 plays in his offense, let alone the things we talked about right at the end of November. You don't see directing of traffic at the line of scrimmage. In fact, you always see, oh, no, where does people line up? And hopefully I can get them lined up to say set huddle time. So I think from those things, then you couple that with how Russell Wilson handled this whole situation, that was the end. That was like, oh, wow, he's going to throw us under the bus. He's going to misspeak, try to change the perception and be politics and kiss babies like Sean Payton talked about before the year. Stop doing that. I bet you that was the last straw. To the point, like, you failed the human test here for where we don't want you leading our locker room anymore. That, I mean, Sean Payton from school, Bill Parcells and everything else, I could tell you that doesn't fly, right? So, you know, I think your points about that are spot on. And then the other thing is, Mike, you talk about the play, right? Here's fair to question. Like, let Russ work after the snap and all that, let Russ cook, do all that. Can he still do that at this age? Is it really, can he? I mean, there's moments here and there, but it's not on a consistent basis to where, like, 5 years ago where I'd go, man, Russ is amazing. Just when he needs to make a play, he makes a play, right? I think that guy's gone. And then you couple that to kind of the other thing you said, Mike. I don't know if he's ever really run an offense at a high level. To the things you're talking about, Breeze, Brady, Mahomes, right? Get them in the right play, check, 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 blah, 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 boom, boom, boom. There we go, new play. I dissected you and ran the offense the way it was supposed to be run and the way I was taught, right? I think he ran an offense in Seattle, but he made plays at a high level. I don't know if he's ever run an offense at a high level. And I think when teams start to dissect Russ and watch film of this, they're going to come to the same conclusion and go, wait, this is kind of like he just kind of sits back there and watches the rush and doesn't throw the ball down the middle of the field, right? And he waits to see people come open, and then he wants to run around and do that. And as we saw this year a few times, and he tried to run around and do that, bad things happen. So that's what's crazy, Mike. I don't know where this is going to go. That's where I'm really interested in this Russell Wilson situation.
You know, it's a serendipitous contrast between Jason Kelce, who is completely and totally authentic, and Russell Wilson, whose reputation over the years has morphed into one of no authenticity. Everything is manicured. Everything is scripted. Everything is more than a little fugazi of what he presents to the world versus who he is in his own body, in his own mind, in his own heart. And one of the things that could help him here, all he does is catch touchdowns. All he does is kiss babies. You get that wake-up call like Chris Carter got for entirely different reasons when he was released by the Eagles. Entirely different reasons. But teams always prefer that a guy gets the wake-up call that allows him to unlock a higher level of performance without having to give up on him, because they want that higher level of performance to happen with them. Could this be, and I don't know the answer to the question, this is all rhetorical.
Right.
The slap in the face, the Deion Sanders bucket of ice water on Tim McCarver, could this be the thing that gets Russell Wilson to understand it's about him? He's not as great as everyone around him tells him. I mean, good Lord, that thing he did with Brandon Marshall, I know he was your teammate, but good God, Brandon, could you attach your lips any more tightly to his ass for an hour and 20 minutes?
Get him, Mike.
Good God.
Yeah, come on, B. Marsh.
People around
Pizzle
him.
His ass he like that, B. Marsh.
He needs to. Am I wrong? Spot the lie.
No.
He needs people around him to tell him hard truths. And I got a feeling Sean Payton spent a full season
trying
to tell him hard truths.
Right.
And he didn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
He'd rather listen to Brandon Marshall and all these other people telling him how great he is.
Yeah, well, B. Marshall's not a part of his camp. He's just trying to get him on a show and talk. So I'm not
He just wanted
him.
The interview.
Yeah, I'm
that's
not
going to
hold
That's how you get
him.
Russell Wilson to respond.
Right.
But wait. Yeah. That's how you get him to respond. You kiss his ass.
Yeah.
Marshall figured out the formula to getting into his house and doing an hour and 20-minute interview. I better kiss his ass before, during, and after.
Right.
He needs some people who are going to tell him like it is, and he's got to respond to it. He can't just shut down. My guess is Sean Payton tried to push every button on Russell Wilson, and his response in that situation is serenity now and withdraw within himself and not have any of it register. The question is, does this register? Does this moment, does this pack your shit and leave moment wake him up? Sorry, Aberdeen. Wake him up and get him to become the guy that he thinks he is.
Man, that's the question. And if you made me bet, I'm saying no. I'm saying no. Because if Sean Payton coaching you, like, all the clues and details and the way we know Sean Payton talks, right? Again, he's from the Bill Parcells School of Coaching. It's in your face. It's no BS, right? It's saying things like, stop kissing babies, man. What are you doing, right? All that. We can play football. He's going to say all the right. If that's not a wake-up call, see, that's where I wonder. Because all these things we're talking about, right? And all these things we're kind of just, you know, rhetorically asking ourselves. All these coaches out there that need a quarterback right now are going to ask themselves all these same questions. Wait, like, damn, Sean Payton? I mean, he's third-string quarterbacks kick ass in his offense and execute the offense. He couldn't do that with Russ? What's the deal there? Wait, in Seattle, they didn't really like him. The team didn't really like him, right? In Denver, right? There's nobody standing on a pedestal right now like, damn, I can't believe we released Russell Wilson. I want him to be my quarterback. We haven't heard anything even close to that out of Denver, right? Those are the things I look at and go, other teams are noticing that. We know that. Come on, you and I follow football all day, every day. So do the rest of these coaches. They're going to know that, let alone they're going to talk to people that actually do have inside glimpses here. That's where I sit here and I just go, I'm really interested to see where it goes with Russell Wilson. Who's going to roll the dice on him? Who's going to get him? You know, because there is a part of it. You get Russell Wilson, he's there. It's the media. It's all the fanfare. Oh, he won a Super Bowl. All that. He's going to disrupt your current quarterback situation when he comes in. And yet, is he good enough to where you just want to roll out the red carpet and go, here you are, you're the starting quarterback for our team, right? That's, to me, going to be, you know, very, very interesting to watch over the next month.
Here's the key.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen sooner than the next month, I think. And this goes back to when things went sideways between Russell Wilson and the Broncos and he got benched. And then the aftermath of it, the test, if it was a deliberate test, will Russ just kind of take it? Or is he going to stir up a bunch of stuff? Is he going to misrepresent, mischaracterize what really happened? All that stuff came out. He had a lot of people talking. On and off the record, he had a lot of people talking, agent and publicist and all this stuff, people I didn't even know were in the mix with all this. Sense I got back then was, if they cut him, He will take the league minimum of $1.21 million, stick the Broncos for the balance of the $39 million he's fully guaranteed, and go to the Raiders. Now, the Raiders might not want him,
uh-huh.
but that's the most obvious, spiteful, I'm going to go to the other team in your division that probably needs a quarterback, and I'm going to play for them, and I'm going to stick it to you, ha-ha, so there. I'm not sure the Raiders want him. You listen to Antonio Pierce, and there's reports they want to trade up from 13 in the draft. He doesn't want a Band-Aid solution. He wants a young guy
right.
that comes in and becomes
right.
a 10 to 15-year starter.
That's right.
So take them off the board.
Right. And does Russell Wilson really seem like an Antonio Pierce type of guy anyways? You know, I would say no. I don't try to put Antonio words in his mouth or anything. But, you know, I know Antonio a little bit. I played against him. I don't think that's what he wants. Like, you know, a diva-ish type quarterback coming in here as he takes over the football team. I don't think that's the type of team he's trying to have out there in Las Vegas. So sorry, Mike, keep going, but I'm with you there.
Okay, so $1.21 million, and I've been saying this for weeks. If he's really only going to take $1.21 million, and everybody knows he's making $39 million. It's hard to feel bad for him. He said something yesterday like, tough times don't last, tough people do. Well, yeah, if you're making $39 million this year either way, it's kind of easy to get through the tough times. I mean, the ends are meeting for the Wilson family. So, but if he's willing to take $1.21, now he's not just going to go anywhere. See, the problem is, and this may be the way he talks his way out of taking $1.21, the financial commitment dictates who plays. And if you go somewhere for $1.21, like let's say Pittsburgh, here's why he's not going to Pittsburgh. You go to Pittsburgh, they're not going to say you're the starter.
No way.
Games.
Exactly right.
They're going to say you compete with Kenny Pickett.
Right.
And you know what? If it's close, and we talked about this, they're going to have some institutional pressure to try to justify the fact that they invested a first round pick on Kenny Pickett. The tie might go to Kenny Pickett. If you're making $1.21 million, and that's a very, very affordable backup with veteran experience, easy for them to say, Kenny's QB1 and Russ is QB2.
Right.
Chris, he is going to use that $1.21, and this is where his agent, Mark Rogers, is going to have to work this, and they're going to have to make a leap of faith. They're going to have to trust somebody. You're the starter, no matter what. In exchange for only taking $1.21 million, you're our guy this year, no matter what. You're our guy. We're not going to bench you. We're not going to undermine you. You're not going to have to compete with anybody. You are our guy.
Okay.
Good luck finding a team that fits that.
Exactly. That's where I go. You go to the AFC, there's no team that even fits that build. There's nobody. The Raiders are the only one where you mentioned it. And I don't, where the state of their organization is at right now, right, I don't see that being the move. I don't, right? They're in new coach, right? They are in Vegas. Are they really going to want, like, oh, we get Russell Wilson, the pressure of that, too, and if it doesn't work, everybody throwing egg in their face and being like, well, what'd you expect? Look at what he did with the Denver Broncos. Why would we take the Broncos trash and then bring it to our own football team? So, to me, that's even a tough political question as far as balancing the Russell Wilson thing with the Raiders. Then you go to the NFC, right? NFC, let's just name the teams that have spots right now. Washington, okay. Would the Giants do this with Daniel Jones and all that? I don't
nope.
think so, right?
He wouldn't do it there.
No.
He wouldn't do it.
It's too risky, right? Atlanta.
Where is the spot where someone says, you're our guy for $1.21 million. Lead us this year, and if it doesn't work out, we'll move on next year. There's no spot right now where that works.
Atlanta would be the only place where that's there, right? But, I don't see that happening. But, yeah, but gotcha.
On that note,
yeah.
This is a good time to take a break because we're almost an hour into the program. We will be talking about Atlanta next. We were talking about who they may get at quarterback next. Maybe all that Justin Fields steam last week was a diversion, was a distraction as to what they really got cooking. And it ain't going to be Russ cooking in Atlanta. Could be somebody else.
Does he love him? Does he not? Does he love him? Does he not?
We'll discuss it next here on this Tuesday edition.
Not if he's not in purple. He doesn't love him if he's not in purple.